This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Samuel chapter 28 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
You remember, Saul's downfall had occurred 30 years earlier when he failed to obey the Lord at Gilgal. Because he didn't do what God had told him to do, afterwards, we were told the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. Problem now is he's in desperate need of guidance. He tries to pray, but the heavens are like brass, and Samuel is no longer around to bail him out. Understand, God isn't trying to be mean to Saul, but why do we expect God to speak to us when we don't obey what he's already told us? You ever thought about that? You see, Saul had already proved that he was unwilling to obey God. He was unwilling to serve God. Why should God give him further instructions? Saul can pray all he wants, but God won't play. That's the issue here. Well, then Saul said to his servants, "Find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her." And his servants said to him, "In fact, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor." Now, Endor was in Philistine territory. And there is a tradition that suggests that this witch was actually the mother of Abner, who was Saul's general at the time. And this is why Saul's men didn't have to go far to search for a medium. Abner knew where his mom was at. She was down in Endor. The other reason that Saul met this witch in Endor was because he knew he was committing an abomination, and he didn't want anybody to see him. He was too ashamed to meet with her outside, so he met her indoors. And that's why they met in Endor. And so Saul disguised himself, and he put on other clothes, and he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. Saul knew he was committing an abomination. The king was ashamed of his actions, so he came to the witch incognito. Saul shows up disguised in costume. Call it the first Halloween costume. Remember, after Saul's rebellion against God at Gilgal, Samuel had warned Saul, "Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft." And I'm sure that at the time, Saul was appalled at Samuel's statement to accuse him of being guilty of a sin like witchcraft. Who would have ever thunk that Saul would eventually turn toward a witch for guidance? How can rebellion be on the par with witchcraft? And yet here, because of Saul's persistent rebellion, he eventually does turn to Satan and to witchcraft for guidance. Guys, be careful of undercover evils. Be careful of these subtle evils we hold in our hearts. Sins of the heart ultimately lead to abominable acts. There's also a little-known Jewish legend that says when Saul walked up to the witch at Endor, she had this silly grin on her face. She's just kind of smiling with this kind of smirk on her face and all. And when Saul walked up to her, he threatened her. He said, "Woman, wipe that smile off your face." And when she refused, Saul hauled off and slapped her. Well, later he was arrested and charged with striking a happy medium. My, oh my. Well, in reality, Saul asked the woman, and he said, "Please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me the one I shall name to you." Saul wants to talk to the dead, a particular practice that was forbidden by God. And then the woman said to him, "Look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums." Remember, he's in disguise. "And the spirit is from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die?" The witch has no idea who she's speaking to and how far the king had fallen from God, that he would be consulting her. And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, "As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you from this thing." Then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" And he said, "Bring up Samuel for me." And what happens next is a total surprise. The witch doesn't even have time to quote her incantations and to cast her mysterious spells. all of a sudden, she is shocked by what she sees. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul." She realizes that this is a sting operation. At least that's what she thinks. She's about to get by. This is a setup. Notice when the witch sees Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. As soon as she saw a real person, she became frightened. She was scared spitless. Philip Keller, he writes this of this incident. In terror, she screamed, for this was not the usual weird apparition that came to her otherwise beclouded mind and deluded spirit. This was an act of the living Lord. This was the one time in her life when what she asked for truly happened. That's why she was so scared. See, I believe she was shocked by the reality of the phenomena. Normally, a seance was a farce. She was pulling the wool over somebody's eyes to take their money. Or perhaps a demon appeared, and she recognized it as such. Evidently, on this occasion, this was an exception that had never occurred before. God allowed Saul a brief communication with Samuel. The only other time that I'm aware in the Bible that this happens is on the Mount of Transfiguration, when Elijah and Moses appear and talk to Jesus. Moses certainly had returned from the dead. Normally, though, this practice is forbidden. The spirit world obeys God's boundaries. And Luke chapter 16 reveals the travel rules for the dead. You want to know what the travel rules are for all dead people? Here it is. You remember when the rich man in hell wanted to return and warn his lost brothers of the horrors that awaited them if they didn't repent and come to God? God forbid him to return to this earth. If they haven't listened to Moses and the prophets, what makes you think they're going to listen to you? He was forbidden to pass over that gulf or to come back to this life. You see, once you've been assigned to heaven or hell, there are no passes. There are no furloughs. What happens here in 1 Samuel chapter 28 is the exception to the normal rules of eternity. Well, verse 13 tells us, "And the king said to her, 'Do not be afraid. What do you see?' And the woman said to Saul, 'I see a spirit ascending out of the earth.' And so he said to her, 'What is his form?' And she said, 'An old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle.' And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stopped with his face to the ground and bowed down. And now Samuel said to Saul, 'Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?'" In other words, I was having a great time. "You're pulling me away from the party, man. What's the deal here?" He's a little perturbed for being disturbed. That's why if I have a heart attack and I fall dead and one of you guys comes up here and does CPR on me and revives me, first thing I'm going to do is punch you in the mouth. "Why'd you do that to me? I was with Jesus, man. I was partying with the Lord. Why did you bring me back to this world?" That was kind of Samuel's reaction. And Saul answered, "I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called you, that you may reveal to me what I should do." And then Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy?" And I told you that a long time ago. "And the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me. For the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and he's given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice and execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me." Now, not necessarily in paradise, but in the afterlife. That's what he's saying. In other words, tomorrow you're going to die. "The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." And then immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. I would imagine so. Saul had been sentenced by God. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day or all night. And the woman came to Saul and saw that he was severely troubled and said to him, "Look, your maidservant has obeyed your voice, and I have put my life in my hands and heeded the words which you spoke to me. Now, therefore, please heed also the voice of your maidservant, and let me set a piece of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way." But he refused and said, "I won't eat." And so his servants, together with the woman, urged him, and he heeded their voice. And then he arose from the ground and sat on the bed. And now the woman had a fatted calf in the house, and she hastened to kill it. And she took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread from it. And so she brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. And then they rose and went away that night. And look at this, sadly, Saul's last meal was at the table of a witch. You know, David said, "The Lord has prepared a table before me." David ate at the Lord's table. It's sad that Saul's last meal was at the table of a witch. And it's obvious here what Saul ate. She took flour, she kneaded it, she made bread. Put this all together. Put this whole story now all together. You got Saul, you got Samuel, you got the witch, Saul, Sam, witch, Saul, sandwich. Obvious what he ate, a Saul sandwich. Chapter 29, it just goes on and on and on tonight, doesn't it? It's just amazing. Chapter 29. Then the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a fountain, which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed in review by hundreds and by thousands. But David and his men passed in review at the rear with Achish. Now the Philistine army, they're preparing for a big battle. And the five rulers of the five Philistine city-states, they want to see a show of force. And so they organize this military parade. The Philistine army marches in front of this packed grandstand. Imagines the flags all flapping in the breeze and the horses snorting and the sandals are polished and the uniforms are pressed. And at the end of the line, there's Achish, king of Gath. But wait, Achish is not the end of the line. There's another battalion pulling up the rear. And then the princes of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And that was a very interesting question. It's amazing nobody has asked this question before. Well, what are the Hebrews doing here? Even the heathen Philistines knew that David was out of place. It was odd to see David on their side of the ball. I wonder how many Christians have been asked the same question. Has anyone ever approached you and said, "Hey, you're a Christian. What are you doing here?" In a bar? Or maybe in the wrong part of the video store? Or maybe in a liquor shop? Or maybe meeting with someone you really shouldn't be seeing. Maybe meeting with someone who's not your spouse in a rendezvous kind of setting. Has somebody ever come up to you and say, "Hey, you're a Christian. What are you doing here?" And Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days or these years? And to this day, I have found no fault in him since he defected to me." But the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, "Make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him. And do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. For with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men?" You remember how he got his wife with the 200 Philistine foreskins? You remember that? If a guy's going to rip off a Philistine of his foreskin, he'd sure do it with his head. It's supposed to be funny, but... He says, "Is this not David, of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands'?" They remembered. And these other Philistine kings, they were a lot less trusting of David and probably a lot more smarter than Achish. David had pulled the wool over Achish's eyes. Maybe this is why David went to Achish and Gath in the first place. Maybe he knew Achish was a little slower than those other Philistine kings and a little bit more gullible. Verse 6, then Achish called David and said to him, surely as the Lord lives, you have been upright, and you're going out and you're coming in with me, and the army is good in my sight. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not favor you. Therefore, return now and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. And so David said to Achish, but what have I done? And to this day, what have you found in your servant, as long as I have been with you, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? And I'm sure David was planning some kind of sabotage. He was going to throw a wrench in the Philistine effort. He was going to end up on Israel's side. He was disappointed he couldn't go to battle. He could have perhaps made a difference. But then Achish answered and said to David, I know that you are as good in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. Now therefore, rise early in the morning with your master's servants who have come with you. And as soon as you are up early in the morning and have light, depart. And so David and his men rose early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel, the valley of Jezreel, otherwise known as Armageddon, the most famous battlefield in the world. Many of history's battles were fought in this valley, up just west of the Dead Sea, up in the fertile regions of the Galilee. Many battles have been fought there, but the final battle between the Christ and the Antichrist will also be fought in that same location in Israel. So the Philistines march northeast to battle. David returns south to Ziklag. Chapter 30. Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag, attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken captive the women and those who were there from small to great. And they did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. While David was away with King Achish, the Amalekites took revenge on him. They retaliated against his raids on their territory, and they went on an attack of their own. They burn down his city and his homes, and they take his wives and his kids captive. And so David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. And their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive. And then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. They were grieved bitterly. You can imagine. And David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, had been taken captive. And now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. David is mourning the loss of his own family, and that would have been heartbreak enough. But in addition, mutiny breaks out. Some angry men take it out on David. They want to blame their problems and all on David. Can you imagine a more distressing, downtrodden, heart-rending situation? David reaches an all-time new low. As the old saying goes, he's lower than a snail's belly. That's pretty low. You know, in high school, I played quarterback on the football team. And there's an old saying that's true of quarterbacks. When the team wins, the quarterback gets too much credit. And when the team loses, the quarterback takes too much of the blame. This is also true of leaders. It's certainly true of pastors. It reminds me of the old pastor who turned the church over to a young man, and along with the keys to the church, he handed the young pastor three envelopes. And each of the envelopes was numbered 1, 2, 3. Well, the old guy told the new pastor, he said, son, when the honeymoon's over, I mean, when you get through this little initial giddy phase and the criticism starts, you need to open envelope 1. Well, it didn't take long for the young man to feel the need. Started to come under fire. And so he opened the first envelope and it said, blame everything on the former pastor. And so that's what he did. And sure enough, it worked, at least for a while. But soon the opposition was at it again. And so the pastor opened up envelope number two and it read, blame everything on the denomination. Again, he tried it. It worked. He followed the advice and stayed off the vultures for a little while longer. Finally, the criticism grew back to great proportions. The attacks were more frequent. People were getting bitter. And so this time, the young man opened the third envelope and read, start preparing three envelopes. Hey, David must have felt like it was time to start preparing three envelopes. But I love what he does. Oh, I love what he does. Notice how David overcomes his depression. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Now, notice this. In times past, when David was down, God sent people to encourage him. Gad, Jonathan, Abigail all came to him during tough times and helped strengthen David. But here, no one comes to encourage David at Ziklag. You know, there are times when God cuts us off from the support of friends and family. He forces us to depend wholly and solely on Him. Through the discipline of loneliness, God teaches us that He alone is faithful to meet our needs, to put wind back in our sails, to give us new strength. I love what it says here. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. That's a very important ability to gain. To be able to strengthen yourself, because friends aren't always around. Your pastor isn't always around. Your friends at church aren't always around. It's important that you develop the kind of relationship with God and develop the kind of spiritual resources in your life where you can strengthen yourself in the Lord. Are you reading the Bible for yourself, not just when you come to church? Are you developing a personal knowledge of the Scriptures? Are you developing a personal prayer life? Are you practicing God's presence on a moment-by-moment, day-by-day basis? Are you personalizing God's promises to you and to your life so that when the time comes, when you feel abandoned by everyone else, you too can strengthen yourself in the Lord? Very, very important. Well, verse 7 tells us, then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. Now, the ephod was the sacred smock worn by the high priest, and there was a breastplate attached to the ephod. It was adorned by 12 jewels that represented the 12 tribes of Israel. And inside the breastplate, there was a pouch. And inside this pouch were the Urim and the Thummim. This is how they sought God's guidance in those days. They believed that these two stones, either through the casting of lots or the reflecting of light, somehow shined light on God's guidance in a particular situation, and they would turn to the Urim and the Thummim for guidance. We no longer have the Urim and the Thummim, but even if we did, we have something better today. We have the pages of Scripture to turn to for guidance. So we no longer use the Urim and the Thummim. Now we use the Usum and the Thummim. And that's how you get God's guidance, by using this book and thumbing through it. You know, we don't really need some kind of magical pouch to reach into and presto, you know. If you had that, there'd be no seeking God. There'd be no waiting on God. There would just be kind of instant mechanical answers. That's not the kind of relationship God wants to develop with us. He wants to develop a relationship where He speaks to us and speaks to our heart and guides our lives through His Word.
In the book of 1 Samuel, you get to meet a boy who became a man, helping guide and counsel others after him. The era of the kings of Israel began with the events of this book of the Bible. As you read along, you notice that some people followed God with all their heart. Others seemed to waver, depending on how the situation would benefit them. What is the state of your interactions with God? Do you follow Him wholeheartedly, or does it depend on if it'll help you out in the circumstances that you're in? It's definitely something to ponder as you listen and learn more about these characters in the Bible. There's always something for you to gain from those who have lived before you. Spend time praying today, asking the Lord to reveal the areas in your life that may be showing your commitment to God or lack thereof. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio today with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. To learn more about this ministry, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. You could even stop by and see us this weekend. The details of where we meet and when can be found once you follow the link to Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we'll catch up with you next time on Sandy Adams Radio.